All right, let's call this meeting of Senate Resources to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:30 p.m. on Wednesday, April 7th, 2021. Let the record also reflect that we have a quorum present today. Our Senator Stevens, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Machicki, Senator Keel, and myself, Senator Rivak. Staffing the committee today are committee aide Betty Tangeman, LIO moderator Nate Williams, and we have Christopher Dickrell online from records. Please silence your cell phones. Today's agenda consists of three bills that we're planning to move today: SB 27, Industrial Hemp Program Manufacturing, SB 33, Seafood Product Development Tax Credit, and SB 62, Gas Leases Renewable Energy Grant Fund. We'll start with SB 27, Industrial Hemp Program. The version before us today is the committee substitute from Senate Labor and Commerce. For the record, we have online to answer questions David Shady, Director of the Alaska Division of Agriculture, Robert Carter, Chief Agronomist at Alaska Division of Agriculture, and Joan Wilson, Senior Assistant Attorney General at Department of Law. I'd like to give a warm welcome to Senator Shelley Hughes, and please, Senator, put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, and I'd like to give a warm thanks to you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill and for the members of the committee. I'm Shelley Hughes, District F, Chugat, Palmer, and I'm going to give you a really brief timeline, and I'm going to apologize in advance to Senator Stevens because he heard this in a prior committee. But I am here today. It started in 2014 when Congress passed the Farm Bill allowing states to establish an industrial hemp pilot program. As you know, marijuana is illegal at the federal level, but they did allow the pilot program for hemp. And it's very different. And Buddy will go into that detail, the difference between hemp and marijuana. So that takes us to late 2016 in the session. Senator Johnny Ellis had a bill to take hemp out from under the crime statutes and make it an agricultural crop. And I got contacted by a farmer, a very conservative farmer, in fact, who wanted to try using hemp as feed for his cattle. So I worked with Senator Ellis at the time, but we were very late in the session and couldn't get it moving. He retired, so that now brings us to the that summer in 2016, the USDA outlined a path forward for hemp. And so when I returned that January, now we're in 2017, I filed the bill to try to get it through, and we succeeded. And it passed unanimously, in fact, and it established a pilot program for hemp. 8 months forward, in December, the federal government then passed the Hemp Farming Act. And that new legislation finally removed the hemp from Schedule I controlled substances list. And then in 2019, they released the rule which allows states to continue their current pilot programs until October of 2020. Now we're past that, right? So, or until a full industrial hemp program was approved. The date was extended due to COVID to this coming October 2021, which brings us to today. So we've got a deadline of October. And because of the passage of that federal farm bill in 2018 and those new USDA regs, we need to make a few small changes in our current state statutes as it relates. So one of the things, it removes the pilot program piece, and it then allows and also permits the manufacturing of hemp-related products and registration and renewal processes for participation in the program. It also adds that a registrant may not have been convicted of a felony involving a controlled substance in the last 10 years. And it finally adds to a couple cleanup provisions that Mr. Witt will review. And so I will hand it over to my aide, with your permission, Mr. Chair, to review the sectional, and or we can answer questions. It's up to you.
Yes, please, Senator Hughes, Mr. Buddy Witt, if you could put yourself on the record and walk us through.
Yes, thank you. Chair Rivak, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Hughes. I'll take you through a sectional analysis of the bill and highlight areas that address cleanup provisions in current law and also areas in which are needed for compliance with federal law. Section 1 starts on page 1 and goes through page 3, line 8. This adds subsections to authorize the Commissioner of Department of Natural Resources to include manufacturing and retail sales of products made from industrial hemp, as well as a registration and renewal procedure into the regulations for an industrial hemp program. Because later on in the bill we are doing away with the pilot program altogether, and we'll get into that a little bit. There's some conditional languages as far as when that takes effect. This section allows the commissioner to the additional powers he needs to properly establish and manage an industrial hemp program going forward. Section 2 amends AS0305C to allow the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources and their actions regarding stop sale orders. This section was added and amended in the previous committee of referral by request of the division. Previous language to this section, AS0305010C, said basically that a stop order had to be issued, the Department of Public Safety had to be notified, and the Marijuana Control Board had to be notified when that stop sale was issued. And that stop sale had to be issued for any hemp plant that was grown over 0.3% THC. The reason they're putting a shall in there, and I believe there's an additional amendment forthcoming that is a friendly amendment to the bill sponsor to clean it up even more. But the in other parts of the statute, we allow that the division can work with a grower of industrial hemp to recondition their product to get it below the 0.3% threshold. When we're giving that sort of allowance to the Division of Agriculture and to a good actor in one section of law, and yet we're hammering them with the stop sale order in another section of law, it seemed completely incongruent. So this section was added with shall language to allow a little bit more leeway with the division and with a good actor. Section 3 adds language that a registrant for industrial hemp program is not eligible if they had been convicted of a felony involving a controlled substance within the last 10 years. And this section was specifically added to be in compliance with federal law. This provision was included in the 2018 Farm Bill, and I have the CFR reference for the committee if you would like to have that. But we also have a memo from Ledge Legal that specifies absolutely this provision is needed. The reason I outline that is that there was testimony in the previous committee of referral that asked for that to be removed. It simply cannot be removed if we want to comply with federal law. Section 4 adds that the department may develop an industrial hemp program that complies with federal requirements and submit a plan for that program to the USDA for approval. So currently we are under the industrial hemp pilot program. We will be under the industrial hemp pilot program until that plan is submitted to the United States Department of Agriculture and approved. The folks online can speak more to the timelines on that, how far they've come along with being able to develop and send that for approval. But this will be the provision. This is the section of the law that just says the department may develop that program. And page 4, section 5, page 4, starting on line 5, a grower may, this is the section I spoke to previously. We make a small change, again, incongruent language, so we want to fix it a little bit, but we change in section 5 that a grower may retain and recondition their crop if it tests above 0.3% but below 1%. This goes along with section 6 that says, it's a new subsection that says if a person retains but fails to recondition, they're guilty of a violation. Previous language simply said they were guilty of a violation. They're not necessarily guilty of a violation in one section of law when we're allowing them to recondition another section of law. So we split it up. And we say that if they test above 0.3% but below 1.1%, they will be given the opportunity to recondition. But if they do not recondition, then they will be hit with a violation. Again, the division can speak more to that. Section 7 changes the statutory definition of industrial hemp. The only reason we need this change in the definition is a simple compliance with the federal definition change. With the addition of this section of the bill, or the changes to this section of the bill, we will match up perfectly with the federal definition of industrial hemp. Section 8 repeals AS0305077, That section of law is the Industrial Hemp Pilot Program, and we'll get more into this on the effective date, as I mentioned before. Section 9 is that conditional effective language for Section 7 of the bill, or excuse me, Section 8 of the bill. The conditional effective date language says that Section 7 is repealed when the pilot, when the industrial hemp program developed by the department is approved by the USDA. And Section 10 says the effective date language, that when the effective date language in Section 7 or for Section 7 comes into effect, that section, the effective date is the date after the notice is received by the revisor of statutes by the Commissioner of Natural Resources. And happy to take any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Witt. Do we have questions from committee members?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just want to mention one thing for members to be aware of, and that is we know we are facing challenges with resource development and we could in coming years. And one of the things that we all know is we need to diversify our economy. This is not the magic bullet, but it's just one more thing. And I will say the Division Ag has told us that they've never received more inquiries on any single crop than they have on this particular one. There's a lot of interest. It is a multi-billion dollar industry in China. Canada is second, and our climate being similar to Canada makes it potentially could be something that could be more than we might imagine. And there are tens of thousands of product made from hemp, building supplies, insulation, plastic-like materials, oil spill cleanup products, clothing. And then, of course, we've all heard for CBD for health use, for lotions, for makeup. So there's just a wide spectrum of potential, and we just want to make sure that door is open for Alaskans that might be interested. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. And just for the sake of the public at home, this industrial hemp is different than mood or mind altering THC marijuana plants. Is that correct? Could you?
Through the chair, Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Hughes. Yes, that's correct. There are many studies that have shown that industrial hemp as defined, meaning those THC goals, has zero psychoactive effect on the human body.
Well, thank you. Do we have any other questions for members of the committee? All right, seeing none, we're going to move on to public testimony. Public testimony is now open. Are there any members online that wish to testify? We see none. Are there any members in the room who would like to testify? All right, seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Public testimony is now closed. I understand that we have a couple of friendly amendments. Can we get a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment 1.
I will object to Amendment number 1 for an explanation. Mr. Witt, could you please put yourself back on the record and explain?
Thank you. Through the chair, Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Hughes. Mr. Chair, let me get my bearings straight here real quick. Find the word. In Section 3 of the bill, this is found on page 3, line 29. This would be AS 0305076A3B as in Bravo. The wording should say was lawfully growing hemp after December 20th, 2018. This is a change that was needed, and I spoke to the memo from Ledge Legal earlier who said, yes, they got that. We got that wrong in drafting. It should say after December 20th, 2018, and this is for grandfather clause for those. And this is under the felony provisions of the bill on who can and who cannot. If you allow someone to lawfully be exempted who is lawfully growing hemp before December 20th, 2018, you would be, in a sense, kind of double speaking against the provision that said you can't have a felony within the last 10 years. So We need, this is the correct language to change that before to after.
Thank you, Mr. Witt. I'll remove my objection. Do we have further objections?
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record. I'm going to object for a little more discussion.
Thank you. Through the chair, Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Hughes. I referenced the wrong word before. The correct one that is being changed from before to after is on line 31 of page 3. My apologies for that.
Thank you, Mr. Witt. And the amendment does reflect that as written. I appreciate that. I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objection? All right, seeing none, amendment number one passes. Are there any other amendments? Yes.
I move amendment number two, which is B.4.
I'll object as Senator Keel for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This just dials in the discretion piece a little bit when it comes to those stop orders. What this says is if somebody is growing industrial hemp and they're not registered with the program, there needs to be a stop order. If they're growing industrial hemp and there's too much THC in it, it can't be reconditioned, they need a stop order. But if they're in that window, they're good actor, they're registered, they're in that window where it could be reconditioned, that's where the may comes in. Then there's some conforming changes that sort of carry that through. Just a reminder that the stop order comes with a notice not only to the Department of Public Safety but the Marijuana Control Board. So we want to hit that sweet spot there and not send stop orders where they don't belong. Mr. Chairman, worked with the sponsor's office on this, so with your permission, Mr. Witt will tell you what I got wrong.
Sure. Please do, Mr. Witt, and also if you could clarify to us under what circumstances would there be a small amount of THC in a crop, if you could help us understand why this is necessary, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Buddy Witt for the record. Nothing wrong with the amendment. The bill sponsor supports the amendment entirely. It clarifies the issue of stop orders, which are very serious things, particularly when you're talking about someone who's a good actor, is trying their best, and are trying to follow the guidelines of the program, and particularly for the division's need to put a stop to anyone who is growing and not registered. As this is a new crop, we want to treat it as something that can contribute to and have a fiscal impact on the state. It's important to protect those who are following the right registration processes and make sure those who are ignoring those statutes can no longer do so, and we can keep the those who have decided to enter the marketplace the right way, we can keep them competitive. As to your question regarding the THC levels in the crop, Mr. Rob Carpenter, state agronomist, is online. And he is an expert in this area. I'm sure he can answer any questions you might have, sir.
Mr. Carpenter, could you please put yourself on the record and answer the question? Oh, Mr. Carpenter has not called in.
Mr. Carter, is Mr. Shady on?
Mr. Shady, could you please put yourself on the record and...
We're both here together, Mr. Chairman. This is Dave Shady, the director. And we want to make sure we're answering the right question, and I think Rob can answer that best. So if we can repeat it, Mr. Chairman, I'll have Rob answer.
Yeah, so the question was, is what under what circumstances would there be small amounts of THC? Why is this necessary to outline in this bill?
For the record, this is Rob Carter with the Division of Agriculture in Palmer. THC in industrial hemp is just a physiological response to the genus and species of the plant. It is cannabis. They are very unique in that their genetics do not produce a significant amount of THC like what one would see in the industry. the legal definition is of industrial hemp is below 0.3. Generally, the genetics of the plant are what define its ability to produce THC, very similar to brassicas, so something like broccoli and Brussels sprouts, although the same species, a very different variety, produces a very different crop. So depending on the variety that the producer has chosen, and of course the expected outcome, if it's fiber, biomass, or floral material for a wellness product, the THC concentration in each one of those varieties is and may be a little different. One may produce, the environment may change it, their fertility management, the stress of a cool and hot summer, a wet and dry summer may increase that THC slightly within the plant, and it may have a farmer that had full intent to produce something with as low THC as possible, produce a plant due to one of those environmental factors or just the genetics of the plant to go above the 0.3. Anything above 0.1 is an automatic destruction and notice of violation. The allowance of having someone the ability to recondition from 0.3 to 1% is that farmers invest a lot of time and resources in planting any crop, industrial hemp in this matter being one of them. And if by chance an environmental factor or genetics allowed the THC concentration to go up a tenth of a percent above the 0.3%, they then could recondition with another lot, and that would be basically a dilution from another farmer that they could purchase, make another variety that they grew to dilute the whole lot of plant material down below the legal limit to allow it to be industrial hemp. For them to still generate revenue and generate crops that then have a lower THC value.
Well, thank you, Mr. Carter, and that helps a bunch. I did hear this as a member of the Labor and Commerce Committee, and I just wanted to clarify that that is a low threshold, so we're making sure that there's oversight in the industry, but also not making sure that folks who are good actors but run into environmental issues aren't severely punished as a result of something outside of their control. So I appreciate that. Are there any other questions? All right, seeing none, I remove my objection. Are there other objections for amendment number two? Seeing none, amendment number two passes. Are there further questions? What is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 27, version 32-LS0249/B, as amended out of committee with the attached individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Any objections? All right, seeing none, the CS for SB 27 moves from committee. We're going to pass around the paperwork while we move on, if that's all right with committee members. All right, next we will have a second hearing on SB 33, Seafood Product Development Tax Credit. The first hearing on the bill was held on February 22nd. Today we plan to adopt a committee substitute, hear public testimony, and then gauge the will of the committee. This does have a further referral to finance. And Senator Stevens, when you are prepared, if you'd like to provide us with some additional remarks on SB 33, please do so, sir.
Brief at ease.
On the record, Senator Stevens, if you have any comments about Senate Bill 33.
Just very briefly, Mr. Chairman, this is a value-added bill for pollock and cod. We already do this for salmon, what it translates into is partial help and reimbursement for investments in hardware, machinery, infrastructure in the processing of these fisheries. Great benefit in using every component of the fisheries that we can. And currently the tax credit only applies to salmon and herring. This opens up the program to include pollock and cod fisheries as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Next, we'll go ahead and take up the committee substitute. Can I get a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill 33, version 32-LS0308/B.
Thank you. I will object for the purposes of discussion and ask Mr. Lampkin, aide to Senator Stevens, to please put yourself on the record and explain these changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you is version B, Bravo. Really, the only change of the bill is at the very end, and this was our intent from the beginning. It's just simply to make it this retroactive to January 1st, so that business, the industry out there, any investments that they've made so far or last year can still be applied. That concludes the summary of changes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have one.
Yes, Senator Machicki.
The change in revenues to the state begin in 23 in the old bill at $2.9 million and grow from there. Does this add close to $3 million? I'm sorry, I think I said million. Does this add $3 million to the fiscal note as well?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, it very, very well may. I suppose they can only estimate what credits will be applied for at that time. But I'm sure revenue should be online to clarify if
All right, it looks like we have Nicole Reynolds, Deputy Director at Tax Division, Department of Revenue. Nicole, could you please put yourself on the record and take a shot at that question?
Good afternoon. This is Nicole Reynolds, Deputy Director of the Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. I apologize if the line is kind of scratchy. I've been having a little bit of trouble hearing you, but the fiscal note that we submitted was based on the language of the bill as it was previously written. We haven't submitted an updated fiscal note that would estimate the revenue impact for fiscal year 2022. That being said, the fiscal impact would be close to what you see in the current fiscal note. So it would be somewhere between $2.9 million and, you know, all the way up to $5.1 million credit value. But if you would like an updated fiscal note, we're happy to provide that.
Thank you, Deputy Director Reynolds. Senator Machicki?
I'm fine. We can wait. I'm sure this is going to finance, so I don't know if we're moving this today, but they'll have an updated fiscal note by the time it arrives.
Yes, this does go to finance. Thank you. Any other questions? All right, I'll remove my objection. Are there any other objections? All right, seeing no further objections, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 33, version 32-LS0308/B is adopted, and we're going to move on to public testimony. Public testimony is now open. Is anybody online who would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anybody in the room who would like to testify? All right, seeing none, we're going to close public testimony. Are there any other questions from committee members? What is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 33, version 32-LS0308, / B, out of committee with the attached individual recommendations and upcoming accompanying fiscal note.
Thank you. Are there any objections? All right, seeing none, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 33 moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. All right, we're back on the record. The last item on the agenda is SB 62, Gas Leases Renewable Energy Grant Fund, and this is the second hearing. The first hearing and public testimony occurred on March 10th. As a reminder, a couple weeks prior, an email was distributed to committee members regarding DNR's response to the committee questions from the last meeting. Now, this document has also been included in your packets. And presently, we have Haley Payne, Deputy Director of the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Oil and Gas, and Sean Clifton, DNR Policy and Program Specialist, available again on the line to provide a brief recap and answer any more questions if necessary. Are there any questions? All right, then we'll bring on Haley Payne. If you could please put yourself on the record, give us a brief recap of SB 62.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Haley Payne. I am the Deputy Director of the Division of Oil and Gas, and with me today is Sean Clifton, our Policy and Program Specialist. We appreciate the opportunity to provide this recap on SB 62. As stated prior, the purpose of this bill is to allow the Division of Oil and Gas to lease and capture revenue from state-owned resources underlying lands restricted to surface use. To be clear, this bill does not open Ketchumack Bay or any other closed area to surface development. It aims only to capture royalty revenue from geology drained through adjacent development on nearby unrestricted land. If the unleased land is drained from wells on adjacent leases, royalties may not be paid to the state, or that revenue could be diminished. This may prevent the state from realizing the revenue unless a remedy is sought through AOGCC for correlative rights. Moreover, leasing is the standard mechanism for establishing a contractual relationship between the state and the developer. Through the lease, the state exercises its authority to comply with mitigation measures and requiring sharing of drilling and reservoir data. A specific note in this bill, we have in Section 2, a specific township that is 5 South, Range 15 West of the Seward Meridian. This is the area that we propose to allow for gas-only leasing while maintaining the surface use restrictions currently in place. Additionally, in later sections of the bill, we seek to amend the statute to authorize the allocation of funds from allow the legislature to appropriate revenue from these leases to the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. This funding would, of course, only take place after the mandatory requirements into the state permanent fund and would be subject to the legislature's designation. We sent some follow-up materials to clarify a little bit about this appropriation, as well as to provide some refresh clarity on the abilities of extended reach drilling. And would just like to see if there are any questions regarding this bill or any of the materials that were sent prior.
Thank you, Ms. Payne. Are there any questions? No, we do not have any further questions. We appreciate that. This bill does have a further referral to the Finance Committee. Seeing no other questions, what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 62, version 32-GS1714 /alpha at a committee with the attached individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Thank you. Are there any objections? All right. Seeing no objections, Senate Bill 62 moves from committee. We're going to go ahead and wrap up. Please sign the paperwork. Thank you to the committee members for your attention today. Our next meeting will be on Friday, April 9th, at which point we'll bring back up SB 97, State Land Sales and Leases, Rivers, and SB 61, Oil and Gas Lease, DNR Modify Net Profit Share. And if there's time, we will open Senate Bill 104, Geothermal Resources. Thank you again. This meeting is adjourned at 4:07 p.m.